Welcome to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. I'm Stephen Spitz. The controversy about the police shootings of civilians continues to rage. Since 2010, Albuquerque police have shot and killed nearly 30 of our fellow citizens. The shootings became nationwide news on March 16th when the APD shot and killed James Boyd, a mentally ill homeless man illegally camping in the Sandia foothills. This time, there was video which put the lie to police explanations. Then, about a month later, the Department of Justice released a scathing report on APD's excessive and unjustified use of deadly force. And now, the city, which had been opposing the DOJ investigation, has agreed to enter into a consent decree which includes a federal court monitor. Here to discuss all of this with us in a KUNM exclusive is a central figure in the recent police protest movement, UNM Professor David Correa. David Correa, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
David, this is a huge story, and we can't possibly cover all of it today. What I'd like to do is start with where we are now, spend most of the show on how and why we got here, and then talk to you a bit about the future, how you see the future.
Sure.
Now, the principal concern of protesters, as I got it, was that the APD couldn't possibly reform itself. To some extent, it's mission accomplished because the DOJ now has taken control. There's going to be a federal court monitor. Is it time to declare victory and go home, do you think?
Well, it's time to declare partial victory, but there's a lot of work left to do. Where there is victory is all the hard work, particularly by family members of victims of police violence who have been lobbying for years to get the Department of Justice involved. And the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice got involved over 2 years ago. That's when the investigation began.
It took a long time.
It took them, the families, a long time to talk the DOJ into coming here. They spent a lot of time lobbying city council a couple years ago, who eventually narrowly passed a narrow vote requesting the DOJ come. At the time, Mayor Richard Berry vetoed that vote. The DOJ came despite the veto. They didn't need an invitation from Mayor Berry to come and investigate this police department. So when they released that report, they had been studying this issue for almost 2 years. And it will force this department to make important reforms regarding the use of lethal weapons, the use of non-lethal weapons, training, standards of hiring. The day-to-day operations of the police department will be monitored during the course of the consent decree, and we'll have to wait and see how long that consent decree
will
be in place.
From what I can tell, the minimum seems to be 5 years.
Yeah, it's been different from city to city. There's a number of cities that are currently operating under consent decrees: Seattle, New Orleans, Newark, Warren, Ohio. Cincinnati was under a consent decree for a long time. But in general, I think it's safe to say that the city will be operating under close monitoring for years. But we don't know what that will look like because they haven't completed the negotiations. Right now, as we're talking, the Department of Justice and the city are negotiating regarding what those specific reforms will be. And only after they're completely done with those negotiations will we find out what that looks like.
Yeah, they're not allowing any kind of public participation in those negotiations. And as I understand it, that's traditional. That's how the DOJ does it.
They made it very clear they wouldn't allow any outside monitoring or participation in that negotiation whatsoever. They have never done it in the past, and they weren't about to make an exception in this case.
On the other hand, David, don't we – I mean, you listed all the things that are in the DOJ findings.
Right.
I mean, we pretty much know that those findings, which were, as I said, scathing, those findings are going to be reflected in the consent decree. So we have a pretty good idea. We don't know the exact language, but we have a pretty good idea that it's going to cover pretty much what the families and what the protesters were hoping it would cover.
I think you're right. It's safe to say that the specific criticisms the DOJ leveled against the city and the police department in that report that was released in April will get somehow translated into very specific action items in a plan that the city will be forced to impose upon itself. The question is, and the real concern that I have and a lot of the people that have been involved in this for a long time have, is how to guarantee we'll be able to institutionalize those changes, because we've had crises around police violence in Albuquerque before. This isn't new. Just because we sort of arbitrarily begin our count at 2010 doesn't mean that police violence began in 2010. It has a long history in Albuquerque into the 70s and the 80s. And in times past, when we've had these moments of crises, they've often been followed by reform measures that have never resolved the problem. As I've written about before, between 1987 and 1997, the Albuquerque Police Department killed 31 people. And that crisis provoked a report called the Walker Luna Report, which concluded similar things that the DOJ concluded, that there were systemic problems in the police department. And there were great reforms that came out of it. The Police Oversight Commission, the Independent Review Officer, there were changes made to training and hiring. But those reforms didn't really resolve the problem in any meaningful way. People kept dying in unjustified shootings. So there's no guarantee, and there's also no history of the DOJ imposing long-term solutions on police departments. These are often short-term, immediate changes and reforms. It's going to be up to us to make sure that those are long-term changes that matter and make a difference. And we don't right now have the political constituency ready to force this city to somehow courageously confront that problem and guarantee that this police department isn't eventually going to start killing people again.
Well, I mean, the idea is that, for example, if you force police to turn on their lapel cameras, which we spent $2 million on, if you force the supervisors to go to the scene of lethal force and, you know, and actually look at it and file reports on it and review the officers are doing, and if you force the police to do these various things, that's going to become institutionalized. And the problem has been that no one has forced them to do it, and so they haven't done it. I think that's the idea of the consent decree, correct?
Yeah, that's the idea of the consent decree. But what this consent decree will not include is meaningful accountability for the police department. The DOJ isn't going to be here long term. This is a temporary visit. Mm-hmm. And we have a police department that is not held accountable. The district attorney doesn't hold individual officers accountable.
Yeah, I'm so glad you raised that. Now, why? I mean, it's sort of a mystery. You know, the attorney general has done nothing. The district attorney's done nothing. They're both Democrats. Mayor Barry's a Republican. You would think that they're, you know, just politically there might be something that would be, you know, in the interest of these people to do something. But nothing's been done.
Nothing's been done. I think it has more to do with the office of district attorney than the particular district attorney in there, because while Kerry Brandenburg has never prosecuted a police officer for the unjustified use of lethal force, neither has any previous district attorney either. So, you know, the district attorney is required to work very closely with the police department. And she has said publicly that she doesn't investigate crimes. The police do. And whatever the police give her, that's the evidence she uses to take to court. And the Department of Justice report pointed out that Internal Affairs, the Albuquerque Police Department unit that investigates its own officers in officer-involved shootings, does a lousy job. They don't fully investigate officer-involved shootings. And so what they end up giving to the district attorney is nothing that's useful in a court. And so she doesn't charge officers for unjustified force. And it's worse in that she often herself, until recently, declares shootings justified when they are clearly not. And when the Department of Justice said most of those shootings they examined in their report were unjustified, and every single one they declared unjustified, she had publicly declared justified. So, you know, there's a very close relationship between the district attorney and the police office. In fact, Kerry Brandenburg went to high school with Police Chief Gordon Eden, so they're old friends. The attorney general has never done anything meaningful, despite the fact that he sits on the Law Enforcement Academy board and he could make changes to training. He hasn't. No one in that position has. So there's no meaningful accountability. The Police Oversight Commission, which I think is the best vehicle to provide oversight and accountability, exists only in an advisory role and can only recommend discipline to the police chief. And every time they have, in the entire history of the Police Oversight Commission, the police chief has rejected.
You know, one of the really strange things to me is that these categories that the Justice Department is insisting on in terms of changes, these categories are on something called the Police Executive Research Forum website. That is the group that Mayor Berry hired and to review police procedures, and was the reason he vetoed the resolution calling for the Justice Department to investigate. Yet there were no changes by the prior police chiefs along the lines that suggested in this Police Executive Research Forum website. And even after the DOJ came out with its report, Police Chief Eden didn't make any of the changes. I mean, it's sort of a mystery why, you know, they're right there. They're not hard to find.
No.
They know what's going wrong and they're not doing it.
And let's point out, too, that the Police Executive Research Forum is a police lobbying organization. This is not an organization.
Yeah, they're not a left-wing organization.
No, this is not. In fact, that report starts by praising the Albuquerque Police Department and really minimizing all of the problems. That PERF report minimizes everything. And despite that, it really did have to address some serious issues with the police department and recommended some changes, as did the DOJ, that the police department has ignored. Part of this, I think, is difficult to explain. I think it's a perfect storm in the fact that we have a police department we have a police department that's become heavily militarized over the last 10, 15 years with a Department of Defense program that's just basically pushing military equipment on municipal police departments as a way to deal with surplus military equipment, at the same time that we've completely hollowed out social services for the poor and the mentally ill. So we have this increasingly militarized police department confronting exacerbated poverty levels in our city, at the same time that we also have some remarkably tone-deaf leaders, both elected and appointed leaders in the city and in the police department, who refuse to recognize any problem. And why would they? They're beyond the reach of the law. No one's holding them accountable, so they can do whatever they want. And that's what they've done.
So this is the perfect segue to how and why we got here. And let me just mention before we discuss that my name is Stephen Spitz. I'm very pleased to have on the show David Correa. David has not been giving interviews to mainstream media, so we're very thrilled to have this exclusive interview with him. And so let's talk about how and why we got here. As we said at the top of the show, about there've been nearly 30 killings since 2010. Many of them are of unarmed Hispanic men. Two of them, and their parents have been very involved, as you said, in this procedure. Alan Gomez and Chris Torres. I mean, they ended up with judgments in the millions and millions of dollars. There were no indictments of the police who shot them. There really wasn't even much of a outrage or a response from the community. And it's, again, looking at this Police Executive Research Forum, their study, they studied, David, 37 shootings between 2006 and 2010. And they came up with the following sort of statistics: 60% Hispanic, 25% white, 3% black, 3% Indian. 50%, more than 50% of the victims had a prior history of mental illness, and 50% were under 30. And so my sort of starting question is, you know, with this disproportionate use of force, lethal force against Hispanics, why do you think the Hispanic community didn't rise up? Like for example, Ferguson. I mean, here we have, you know, Michael Brown being shot, and the black community rose up in arms against the police here. We really didn't see that.
Well, let me dispel the myth that I've heard a lot lately that Ferguson erupts in violence and resistance and Albuquerque's been pretty complacent. You know, let's not forget that March and April were pretty dramatic months in the city with young people People new to this struggle and people that have been doing it for years marching in the streets in great numbers. I mean, we had 1,000 people in the streets on March 25th, just a week and a half after James Boyd was killed. We had hundreds and hundreds that marched every weekend after that and confronted a militarized police response just like they did in Ferguson. I think the difference is that the DOJ report came out very quickly after those
it was days later.
Well, James Boyd was killed on March 16th. The first they didn't release the video until I think it was Friday, March 20th. It might have been 20th or 21st. And so the marches were the last week in March and the beginning of April. And then on April 10th, I believe, is when the DOJ released reports. So it was very soon after. And that was such a damning report and confirmed everything that everyone had been saying, but that nobody believed. Very few people.
Yeah, the video finally confirmed what the protest movement had been saying.
Yeah, and we needed that video because I think that the stories. I mean, I've been writing stories about police violence in Albuquerque since 2011, and family members have been telling stories of their children being shot and killed in ways that are even more shocking, quite frankly, than James Boyd's death. But there was never the video of that, and so. I mean, to give you a brief example, the DOJ report tells the story of the shooting of Andrew Lopez in 2009, who was a young man driving a car pulled over for dim taillights. And the police later said that his car matched a car that was engaged in a crime, even though it didn't – the make, model, and color didn't match the one they said they were looking for. He was frightened. This is the South Valley, which is heavily policed. He got out of the car and ran, and he was unarmed. And he was shot in the back as he was running away, unarmed. And he fell to the ground. And police officer Justin Montgomery walked up to him as he lay on the ground, wounded, bleeding, but alive and conscious, and put a gun to his chest and pulled the trigger. Now,
that sounds like murder.
That was. It sounds like murder. D.A. Brandenburg called it justified, despite the fact that he was unarmed and initially shot in the back and wounded and incapacitated when Justin Montgomery put a round in his chest. Now, that happened in 2009. That story was out. We've talked about that story. It was one of the reasons why family members have been outraged for years. But it didn't bring people into the streets because we didn't have that video. And that video of James Boyd finally confirmed what everyone had been saying.
So I have my own theory about why people didn't go into the streets. And my theory is that when you're talking about mentally ill people and killing mentally ill people, you're talking about the lowest caste of our class society. It, you know, the DA isn't interested. The attorney general isn't interested. And I guess I have to say maybe I'm guilty too. We're not concerned enough about people with mental illness. And so it seems like so much of this problem is really shooting the disadvantaged, shooting the mentally ill.
I would agree with you, particularly in the way in which the targets, particularly over the last 5 to 10 years in Albuquerque, the targets of police killing are homeless people and people that suffer from mental illness or people that are in maybe a momentary mental health crisis. And this is not a constituency of people with a political block.
Exactly.
These are people that are marginalized and disenfranchised and largely dispossessed in this society. And so unlike in Ferguson, where these targets of police killing are young black men who, you know, it is not a constituency that has political infrastructure in place. There, you know, in Ferguson, there's a history of particularly black political organizing and black churches in North County, St. Louis, that activists and community members can draw on to help organize the kind of resistance to police violence we saw in Ferguson. Right now, the people that are being killed are the people on the margins, the people that are made invisible in our society because of the way in which we've completely disinvested in social programs that served the most vulnerable. And so, as I've said before, part of this perfect storm we find ourselves in is the fact that we've literally created a city where it's just a matter of time before homeless and mentally ill people are going to come into violent conflict with the police. And all too often in Albuquerque, that's a fatal conflict.
So if you've just tuned in, this is New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. My name is Stephen Spitz, and we're talking to one of the leaders of the protest movement against the killings of unarmed people by the Albuquerque Police. And I want to turn to the third topic of what you see the future is. But before I do that, just a personal question. There were some things that were going on with you while all this was happening, your behavior. And I wondered if you feel comfortable updating us on any or all of that.
Sure. The district attorney's office filed a nolle prosequi, means basically they're dropping the charges against me.
Congratulations.
Those charges were a part of the kind of intimidating tactics that the police department has used against activists and critics for a long time. And I think people, when they saw the video, understood that. And it was a crazy week because on a Monday I was charged with a felony, and the following Monday I received tenure from the university.
Oh, you get tenure, yeah.
Yeah. So
congratulations.
Thank you
on
very
that
much.
Too.
Yeah. I think that, you know, the university values its faculty engaging with the community, and my position is that I would be a hypocrite if I'm telling them stories about these struggles and I'm not willing to march in the streets with the people that I'm writing about. And I think the university recognizes that, and So I think that you know, the university can be better. The American Association of University Professors criticized the university for the tone, but particularly in the wake of the charges being dropped, I think it's clear that if the university was monitoring this, what they learned was that one of their faculty people was targeted by the police department in a pattern of intimidation, and the charges being dropped demonstrate that those were always without merit anyway.
So let's talk then about the future. And you said earlier that, you know, that the reforms had to be institutionalized in order to be meaningful. And I think that's absolutely the case. And one of the things one sees when you know, if you look at the number of killings following the release of the Justice Department report, I mean, the rate of killings sort of continues. So, you know, you would think that now that the DOJ is involved, the James Boyd shooting was referred, I think, to their criminal division. So now there's at least some kind of threat. And yet, as you say, you know, it's not clear that the rate of killings is going to decrease. So, you know, what do you see happening in the future? And I should throw into this, who knew there was a business called independent federal monitors? There are all these businesses that are composed of former police chiefs and lawyers who make millions of dollars a year. If Albuquerqueans are worried about the guys negotiating this contract, they should really worry about the millions of dollars that this monitor is going to make per year.
Right. I suspect that Tom Stryker will probably be a candidate as a federal monitor.
He has been part of a monitoring company. I know that.
Yeah, and he's representing the city in the negotiations with DOJ right now. He's the former police chief of Cincinnati who, while police chief, tried to do his best to get around a consent decree with the federal government on racialized violent policing. I think in terms of what's next and the direction we're going to go in, there's often people who've been protesting, who've been critics of the police department, have been criticized for not having any specific ideas or solutions. And that's not true. It's never been true. We have, I think, been among the most vocal in arguing for a specific path to accountability and institutionalizing reform. And it would be really strengthening the Police Oversight Commission that we currently have. Three members of the Police Oversight Commission resigned in protest about 2 months ago because it's toothless and it's just a whitewash and it doesn't do anything it doesn't do what it's supposed to do, which is to really hold police accountable. And if we want to hold police accountable, then we need a Police Oversight Commission that's independent of the mayor and the city council, has its own budget, can't be meddled with, has its own legal representation, can conduct its own investigations of officer-involved shootings or complaints against officers, and can discipline officers up to and including firing.
Yeah, well, there's a letter agreement between the city and the DOJ, and one of the things that's in there is, quote, that they say is going to be part of the consent decree is community engagement and oversight. And I think one of the things everybody's looking for is what exactly does that mean? As you
said, it means nothing right now.
It doesn't mean anything right now.
And it also can't mean anything unless we make some large structural changes to the way that this government operates. So for one, we have to change the charter of the city of Albuquerque to take away final authority over the police department from the mayor. We also have to refuse to allow the police union to negotiate a contract that prohibits oversight, civilian oversight. Right now, the police union will not submit to oversight outside of the police department itself.
Yeah, and one of the advantages to a consent decree is that that can overrule the agreement that the city has with the union.
It can. Any agreement that they come to will make null and void any police union contract that contradicts it. But here's the problem. No consent decree ever has imposed on a police department an independent police oversight commission with the authority to discipline police officers. They've never done it. We've asked them to do it. They've heard us say it 100 times each at meeting after meeting after meeting in a sort of chorus of people saying, if we don't come out of this with meaningful police oversight, it doesn't matter.
Well, they want to leave it to the monitor, I assume.
Well, no, I think the Department of Justice doesn't see it as their role to produce the kind of vehicle through which accountability can happen long term. All the Department of Justice wants to do is create a consent decree. We'll have a sunset clause in it. And during the course of its life, will be monitored by a person that they will, along with the city, select. And once that ends, it's over. And if a city decides to revert to previous policies after the end of that period of federal monitoring, they can. Unless in the interim we put into place measures that take away from the police department powers it currently has. And that most importantly means that we have to take back from the police department the ability to discipline its officers. They have time and again, and they're not the only ones, there are other police departments everywhere else, who claim that there's some sort of special knowledge about being a police officer that us non-police officers just don't know about, and we can't possibly weigh in or discipline officers because we don't have that specialization. Well, that's ridiculous. We have to reject that kind of rhetoric because that's the kind of rhetoric that got us into this problem in the first place. In the progressive area, every major metropolitan police department was under the authority of a civilian body that could discipline officers. And the rise of police unions in the United States is largely around fighting that. And so police unions organized around undermining civilian oversight. I mean, the fact that I'm even using the word civilian here is, I think, you know, revealing language. But that, you know, that's the origins of police unions are not about labor solidarity and standing with workers. Police unions are entirely about protecting police from oversight. And so we have to rebuild this infrastructure. And if we can do it in Albuquerque, we'll be the only ones. We'll be the only municipal police department that has to submit to civilian oversight because there's not a single other one in the United States that does it.
I'm sorry to say we're out of time. I'd like to thank my guest, UNM Professor David Correa. Thanks also to my producer, Jefferson White. The executive producer of this show is Lynn Shebeki. My name is Stephen Spitz, and you've been listening to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas on KUNM. Podcasts of this show are downloadable at iTunes under Stephen Spitz. Archives of all my shows are available at stephenspitz.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time.